Hello and welcome to your GCSE Philosophy Revision Podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we are diving into one of the most fascinating and genuinely important topics on your specification, moral philosophy. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking, ethics, really? But trust me, by the end of this episode, you're going to see why these ideas have shaped how we think about right and wrong for thousands of years, and more importantly, how to absolutely nail the exam questions on them. So here's what we're covering today. We've got three big ethical theories: utilitarianism, Kantian deontological ethics, and Aristotelian virtue ethics. We'll break each one down clearly, look at the key thinkers and their arguments, then I'll give you my top exam tips, a quickfire quiz to test your recall, and a summary to tie it all together. Let's get started. First, let's zoom out. Moral philosophy, or ethics, is the branch of philosophy that asks, what makes actions right or wrong? What does it mean to live a good life? These aren't just abstract questions. They're the questions that come up when we think about stealing, lying, eating animals, or even playing violent video games, all topics that appear directly on your specification. The three theories we're studying each give a completely different answer to these questions, and examiners love to see you compare and contrast them, so keep that in mind throughout. Right, let's start with utilitarianism. The core idea is beautifully simple. An action is morally right if it produces the greatest happiness for the greatest number of people. The key word here is utility, which means happiness or pleasure. And the goal is to maximise utility. Now, there are two big names you absolutely must know. First, Jeremy Bentham. He was an 18th century philosopher who developed what we call act utilitarianism. For Bentham, every individual action should be judged by calculating how much pleasure or pain it produces. He even created a tool for this, the hedonic calculus, which measures pleasure across seven dimensions: intensity, duration, certainty, propinquity, that means how near in time, fecundity, purity, and extent. A handy memory hook for those seven is, I do cry pretty feelings please everyone. The first letters give you intensity, duration, certainty, propinquity, fecundity, purity, extent. Write that down. Now, Bentham's approach is purely quantitative. He's just counting units of pleasure. But John Stuart Mill, a 19th century philosopher and Bentham's godson, thought this was too simplistic. Mill argued that pleasures differ in quality, not just quantity. He famously said it is better to be Socrates dissatisfied than a fool satisfied. For Mill, intellectual and moral pleasures are higher pleasures. They're worth more than mere physical ones. This is called qualitative hedonism, and it's a crucial distinction that many candidates miss in the exam. Here's another vital distinction: act utilitarianism versus rule utilitarianism. Act utilitarianism, associated with Bentham, says calculate the consequences of each individual act. Rule utilitarianism, associated with Mill, says follow the rule that, if generally followed, would produce the most happiness. So for a rule utilitarian, you should follow the rule do not steal, because a society where no one steals generally produces more happiness than one where stealing is permitted, even if in one specific case, stealing might produce more happiness. This is a really common source of confusion in exams, so make sure you can clearly explain the difference. One major criticism of utilitarianism is the tyranny of the majority. If torturing one innocent person would make a million people very happy, a strict utilitarian calculation might say, do it. This seems deeply wrong to most people, and it's a powerful objection you should include in your evaluations. Robert Nozick's experience machine thought experiment is also relevant here. If all that matters is maximising pleasure, why wouldn't you plug into a machine that gives you perfect simulated happiness? Most people intuitively feel they'd rather live a real life, even with pain. This challenges the utilitarian claim that pleasure is the only thing of intrinsic value. Now, let's move to our second theory, Kantian deontological ethics. Immanuel Kant was an 18th century German philosopher, and his approach to ethics is completely different from utilitarianism, where utilitarianism is all about consequences, what happens as a result of your action. Kant says consequences are irrelevant. What matters is whether you are doing your duty. The foundation of Kant's ethics is the concept of the good will. For Kant, the only thing that is unconditionally good is a good will. A will that acts out of duty, not out of self-interest or emotion. If you help someone because you feel like it or because it makes you happy, that has no moral worth for Kant. Moral worth comes only from acting because it is your duty. Now, how do we know what our duty is? This is where the categorical imperative comes in, and this is absolutely central to the exam. The word categorical is crucial. A categorical imperative is unconditional. It applies to everyone, always, regardless of circumstances. This is completely different from a hypothetical imperative, which says, if you want X, then do Y. Kant's moral law is not conditional on what you want. This is one of the most common mistakes candidates make, confusing the categorical imperative with a hypothetical one. Don't be that candidate. Kant gives us two key formulations of the categorical imperative. The first is the formula of universal law. Act only according to that maxim by which you can, at the same time, will that it should become a universal law. In other words, ask yourself, what if everyone did this? If you want to lie, ask, what if everyone lied? The whole institution of communication would collapse. Therefore, lying is wrong. Always, no exceptions. The second formulation is the formula of humanity. Act so that you treat humanity, whether in your own person or in that of another, always as an end and never merely as a means. This means you must never use people as tools for your own purposes. Using someone as a human shield, for example, treats them purely as a means and is therefore wrong. A key criticism of Kant is the problem of clashing duties. What if telling the truth would lead to someone being murdered? Kant says, tell the truth anyway, because lying is always wrong. Most people find this deeply counterintuitive. This is a great evaluation point for your essays. Now, our third theory, Aristotelian virtue ethics. Aristotle was an ancient Greek philosopher, and his approach shifts the question entirely. Instead of asking, what should I do? He asks, what kind of person should I be? The goal of human life for Aristotle is eudaimonia, often translated as happiness or flourishing, but it's much richer than that. It means living and doing well, fulfilling your potential as a human being. But how do we achieve eudaimonia? This is where the function argument comes in. Aristotle argues that everything has a function. A knife's function is to cut, a doctor's function is to heal. What is the function of a human being? Aristotle says it is to exercise reason excellently. And to do that, we need virtues, excellent character traits. Virtues for Aristotle are the mean between two extremes. This is the doctrine of the mean. Take courage. The vice of deficiency is cowardice, too little courage. The vice of excess is recklessness, too much. Courage is the virtuous mean between them. This applies to all virtues. Generosity is the mean between miserliness and extravagance. Temperance is the mean between insensitivity and self-indulgence. Crucially, virtues are not innate. They are developed through habituation. We become courageous by practicing courageous acts. We become generous by practicing generosity. And to navigate the mean in complex situations, we need practical wisdom, frunesis, the ability to discern the right course of action in any given circumstance. A key criticism of virtue ethics is the skill analogy problem. Aristotle compares virtue to a skill like playing the flute, but critics argue that moral virtue is fundamentally different from a skill. You can't just practice your way to being a good person in the same way you practice scales on the piano.
Right, let's talk exam technique. This is where marks are won and lost. first, always define your key terms at the start of any answer. If a question asks about utilitarianism, begin by defining utility and the principle of maximising utility. Examiners award marks for accurate definitions, so don't skip this step. Second, when a question asks you to evaluate a theory, make sure you engage with the specific issues on your specification. For utilitarianism, that means discussing the tyranny of the majority and Nozick's experience machine. For Kant, discuss clashing duties. For virtue ethics, discuss the skill analogy. Generic evaluations that don't reference these specific issues will not reach the top mark bands. Third, use the set texts to support your arguments. Examiners want to see that you can engage with the actual philosophical texts, not just textbook summaries. Fourth, practice applying each theory to the applied ethics topics: stealing, simulated killing, eating animals, and telling lies. For each scenario, ask, what would a utilitarian say? What would Kant say? What would Aristotle say? And why? This kind of comparative application is exactly what high mark questions demand. Now, the most common mistakes I see candidates make. Number one, confusing act and rule utilitarianism. Remember, act utilitarianism judges each individual action by its consequences. Rule utilitarianism judges actions by whether they follow rules that generally maximise happiness. Number two, treating Kant's categorical imperative as a hypothetical imperative. The whole point is that it is unconditional. If you write, according to Kant, you should tell the truth if you want to be a good person, you've misunderstood the theory completely. Number three, ignoring habituation and practical wisdom in virtue ethics. These are not optional extras. They are central to how Aristotle thinks virtue is developed and applied. Candidates who leave them out are leaving marks on the table. Time for a quick-fire quiz. I'll ask the questions and I want you to pause the podcast and try to answer before I give you the answer. Ready? Question one. What is the principle of utility? Answer. The principle that actions are right in proportion as they tend to promote happiness and wrong as they tend to produce the reverse of happiness. Question two. What is the difference between Bentham and Mill's versions of utilitarianism? Answer. Bentham measures pleasure quantitatively. More is better. Mill measures pleasure qualitatively. Some pleasures are higher and more valuable than others. Question three. What is the formula of universal law? Answer. Act only according to that maxim by which you can at the same time will that it should become a universal law. Question four. What is eudaimonia? Answer. Aristotle's concept of human flourishing, living and doing well by exercising reason excellently and developing virtuous character. Question five. What is the doctrine of the mean? Answer. Aristotle's idea that virtues are the mean between two extremes, a vice of deficiency and a vice of excess. For example, courage is the mean between cowardice and recklessness. Brilliant! How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and reread that section of your notes. Let's wrap up with a quick summary. Today we covered three major ethical theories. Utilitarianism, associated with Bentham and Mills, says actions are right if they maximise happiness for the greatest number. Kantian deontology says actions are right if they fulfil our duty, as determined by the categorical imperative. Act only on maxims you could universalise and always treat people as ends, never merely as means. And Aristotelian virtue ethics says the goal is eudaimonia, human flourishing, achieved by developing virtuous character through habituation and practical wisdom, guided by the doctrine of the mean. Remember, examiners reward precise terminology, specific engagement with the issues on the specification, and comparative analysis across the theories. You've got this. Good luck with your revision, and I'll see you in the next episode.